relative. But suppose vibrating strings really do exist. If sometime in the future we can somehow prove that, would that be the end of the line, as it were? Would vibrating strings be at the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to understanding matter, or could there be something that makes up vibrating strings?
Yeah, so that's a great question. It's sort of a question as to whether a theory as ambitious as the stringy, I hate to call string theory, by the way, a theory. It's more of an approach yet. A theory truly is something you can test. We're not there yet. But this approach seems to be able to address many of these very fundamental questions. And you might ask, is that the end? Is that the final theory? I'm very agnostic on this point of view. It could be. It could be, just like the exploration of the Earth terminated since the Earth is round, we explored almost all of it. That was the end of exploring the Earth. But it also could be that reality is more like a flat Earth, and once we understand the answers to some of these really fascinating questions we're now asking, new questions will arise, as they always have in the past. The fact that we can't think of those, even of those new questions at the moment, is because we don't know enough to be intelligently ignorant.
Let me ask you about the Nobel Prize, because you did win the Nobel Prize in Physics in 2004. Did that really change your life? I guess everybody kind of wonders that. Or did it change the way you do science?
Well, it certainly affected my life in the sense that I'm asked to do a lot more things, and I have a lot more opportunities to travel, to speak, a lot of bother. So actually, it is kind of good that they most often give the Nobel Prize after many, many years. They take their time. It's probably very good for science because it does cut down on your productivity.
David Gross, thanks so very much for speaking with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
David Gross is a theoretical physicist and a string theorist at the Kavli Institute for Theoretical Physics at the University of California at Santa Barbara. He is co-recipient of the 2004 Nobel Prize in Physics. What is happening to modern physics so that these questions are becoming more challenging, more complex, more difficult to test?
Well, I think it's just a matter of the fact that science is a cumulative endeavor, right? You find the big, simple things first, and then you start refining your search, and you find smaller, more complex things. It's sort of like biology. 150 years ago, biology was mostly a matter of, looking at plants and animals, stuff like that, and you're figuring, okay, they got lungs, and they got, hearts and stuff like that. And then you sort of figure out how those work, and then you look further, and now pretty much you get into cells, and then it turns out inside the cells there are parts, and everything gets really complicated. And now when you look in a book about biology, it's all these chemicals and stuff like that. It's on the microscopic level, and that's, sort of what's happened in physics.
We don't hear enough about those plants with hearts and lungs.
Yes. We have to win the hearts and lungs of plants.
Well, thanks to those who have big hearts and who have proven to be a big help in producing the show. Senior producer Gary Niederhoff, operations manager Barbara Vance, and intern Daniel Marino.
Thanks also to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David, and to the William K. Bowes Jr. Foundation. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, a nonprofit scientific and education organization whose scientists study the origin and nature of life and the behavior of comets and asteroids. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to an episode of Big Picture Science called Too Big to Prove. If you want to hear more Big Picture Science episodes, well, you'll find them in our archive at bigpicturescience.org.
And if you're a podcast listener but prefer listening to over-the-air radio because you have hopes of building a 6-transistor gravitational wave detector, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show.
This is the magic of radio, and you are listening to WHFR Dearborn.
Welcome to the new impact presented every month on the fourth Tuesday on WHFR Dearborn, making waves on 89.3 FM.
Have you ever said, and thought, I didn't know that? Or, that's a different point of view?
Every fourth Tuesday, 89.3 listeners will have the opportunity to learn about the many organizations and people who are doing things for Dearborn and the Tri-County communities in Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb.
Impact is devoted entirely to the issues of interest to the 89.3 listeners.
Impact is part of WHFR's weekly talk show format, presented every Tuesday from 1 until 2 p.m., making waves from Henry Ford Community College radio station, broadcasting on 89.3 FM from Dearborn, Michigan.
Please tune in, and you might find yourself saying,
Hello, and welcome to Impact. The following is a pre-recorded program. It does not reflect the views of WHFR, Henry Ford College, or staff.
The Advocacy Center movement started years ago because the system was fragmented. And many times, children who have been sexually abused had to repeat their story over and over and go to different entities.
That produced not only bad results for the children, but bad results for the system, too.
They don't need people doubting them or questioning them in a manner that seems judgmental or critical. They need an unconditional positive regard.
Here at the Children's Assessment Center, we've made a child-friendly environment, bringing everybody together under one roof so that children would not have to be re-victimized. Our law enforcement, our DAs, county attorneys, Children's Protective Services, everybody's on board and everybody's working together as a team. Children don't have to repeat their story over and over like they did in the past. We have trained forensic interviewers who interview them, and their information is recorded and then shared with all the entities necessary. We also have clinical social workers. We have therapy and psychological staff here at the Children's Assessment Center.
We see it all in the way of bad things that happen to children. More often than not, we see kids that have not only been sexually abused, they have also been physically abused, neglected, sometimes prostituted. Even though child sexual abuse is the major way that people find their way to this advocacy center.
When it first opened 15 years ago, we only had 10 partner agencies at the time, and now we have 45.
The Internet Crimes Against Children team is part of this advocacy center. So many of our kids are abused one way or another via technology, and to have people knowledgeable about that, they can get this group of sexual abuse survivors to services is huge. They're helping those children and families and bringing those types of offenders to justice.
With the advent of the internet over the last 10 to 15 years, the predators now never have to leave their house. They're able to log on in their own home and go out and meet potential victims. They're going to start sending nude photographs of themselves to the children, or have the children produce and send nude photographs to them. At some point, that predator wants to meet a live child for some type of a sexual purpose. Once it's reported to a law enforcement, what we try to do is we try to get that child into our Children's Assessment Center so that they can begin treatment, so that child can begin to heal.
I know without any doubt, when they're here and they walk through our doors, the outcome of their case and their health and welfare will be much better than what it was before they came here. My heart hurts for the children who don't find their way to our doors and live with a life of trauma and abuse, and it never ends.
If he's still like on probation, 2,500 feet in Dade County.
When I train police officers in investigating sex crimes, I tell them you have to be able to tiptoe in steel boots.
Okay. We can hopefully make sure that that offender spends the rest of their life in prison.
You have to be tough and strong and know how to accurately analyze and objectively analyze the evidence. But you have to understand how delicate not only the child victims are, but the people immediately around those children. here at Christie House, families can come to one location right after this horrible event has been disclosed and get the services that are necessary in one stop.
We see about 800 children a year here at Christie House. Many of our children that come in here come in not just with sexual abuse, but also with physical abuse and neglect.
We want to come play inside now?
What the children and the families need from the service providers is a comfort zone, a safe place where they could go and feel comfortable. The most important thing is the relationship between the therapist and the child and the family. Once they understand what is abuse and how it happens, then we could gradually start exploring in more detail what happened in their abuse.
What are we reading today?
We want to be able to reconstruct or adapt those thoughts, feelings, and behaviors that were in response to the abuse, so they could realize that there's nothing to be ashamed about. It wasn't their fault, and that they're learning how to deal with it, and now they're learning how to prevent it from happening in the future.
We are going to do everything we can to try to keep the children from having to testify in court. If the case really does go to trial, members of the Christie House therapy team try to ensure that that child will have sufficient support systems in place that they can hold up to the rigors of testifying down the road.
This is showing us what the courthouse looks like.
For many children, actually coming to court can be very empowering for them.
None of this is about scaring you or doing anything that's going to make you feel bad.
When they get to the courtroom, they get to stand up for themselves and they get to tell what really happened.
So they go to court.
A form of abuse that has been overlooked for years in this country is our children that are being exploited in the sex trade. When we looked at children involved in prostitution, we realized that these are really victims of child sexual abuse. If a child in the state of Florida can't consent to having sex, then how can they be charged with a crime of prostitution? So now we've shifted our focus and we view these children as victims. The biggest weapon we have against child sexual abuse is talking about it, because so many victims will grow up in a home being told that this is normal. This is what normal is. And as we educate parents as well as children, then we'll be able to change the mindset.
This is Betty Daniels. Welcome to Impact. And in the studio with me is Melanie Richards. And Melanie, would you introduce yourself and tell us what organization that you're with?
Hello, my name is Melanie Richards. I'm the Assistant Director of Kids Talk Children's Advocacy Center, which is a program of the Guidance Center.
Okay. And now, when we say Kids Talk, exactly what does Kids Talk do?
Kids Talk is a children's advocacy center, often referred to as a CAC for short.
Okay, and you and Tomato, because we have people who know alphabet but don't know what the CAC means.
Yes, okay. So the CAC is Children's Advocacy Center. It's just kind of a mouthful, so okay. All we right. Sometimes just say Kids Talk CAC.
Okay,
yes.
All right.
And what we do is we work with a multidisciplinary team, mm-hmm. Including the prosecutor's office, the attorney general's office, the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, specifically Children's Protective Services, law enforcement, to help coordinate and work with allegations, children who have been alleged to have been abused, neglected, or otherwise maltreated in Wayne County.
Okay. Now, are you a part of the Protective Services, or is this another arm of it, or just how?
We are not. We work with them. We are completely separate. As I said, we are part of the Guidance Center, which is a nonprofit, a 501, mm-hmm. and we are. It's almost like a coordinating body. So there's nationally, there's about 777 CACs. There's mm-hmm. 31 in Michigan.
Okay.
Each of them serves one county, so we serve all of Wayne County,
mm-hmm.
and we work collaboratively with all of these agencies. When there's an allegation that a child has been abused or neglected or otherwise maltreated, there is many people who need to be involved. There's the law enforcement with the criminal side, there's Children's Protective Services, obviously, with the protective side, and what we try and do is coordinate everybody so that hopefully to limit the amount of times children have to go through the process, and so they're not being re-victimized by the system that's intended to protect them.
Okay. Now, the advocacy, is this a new concept, or did it grow? I know, how did it come to be, this whole advocacy unit kind of thing?
Yeah, so it was actually began in Alabama by a former district attorney who turned into a congressman. And he was really kind of frustrated and upset with children's cases being thrown out of criminal court. And what was happening is that the children were being interviewed multiple times regarding the same allegations.
Yes.
So perhaps the child made a disclosure at school. They would have to perhaps tell their teacher and then the guidance counselor and the principal, and then the police would come and Children's Protective Services. Maybe they'd have to go to see the school nurse. Maybe you should go to the emergency room and talk to them.
Okay.
You need to go talk to an attorney. And so it was very traumatizing for the children.
And that was the word I was thinking about.
To have to repeat everything. And then if you ask anybody, particularly a child, the same question 10 times, the children start to think, maybe I gave the wrong answer because they keep asking me. Let me give a different answer. Or perhaps if you say something 10 times, you remember something. You know what? My shirt was green, not blue.
Okay.
And what was happening is the children's accounts were being labeled as not credible, and their cases were being thrown out of court.
Okay.
So what the congressman wanted to do and has been very successful at doing is create a place where instead of the children having to go to each of the professionals, all the professionals come together.
Okay.
They coordinate those services.
All right.
And in Wayne County, we record those interviews.
Right.
We conduct one of the things that the Advocacy Center does is forensic interviews.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a protocol, a Michigan protocol that was actually created by Nancy Deal, who was also a founder of the Kids Talk CAC program. And it is now nationally used by the FBI as a protocol. And it's a truth-seeking interview. It's a fact-finding, not a fact-confirming. So what they do is use the interview to test hypotheses of why these statements may have been said.
Okay.
So we're not confirming that something happened. We're trying to find out, did something happen or not?
Okay.
So that's very important.
All right. So we're talking how long now that we're talking about? How many years do you think?
So in Wayne County, the Children's Advocacy Center began as a forensic interview program. And in 2001, approximately, the Guidance Center took it over from the prosecutor's office. There was some concern that that program being housed in the prosecutor's office could be a conflict of interest.
Right.
So it was interviews were conducted with area organizations, and the Guidance Center was invited to take on this forensic interview program and grow it into an advocacy center.
Okay.
So as I said, we started with forensic interviewing. Then next was added advocacy. So now every child and family who comes is linked with an advocate. That's to help them through the process because it can be a bit overwhelming. There's many people involved.
All right.
And also link them with any services or referrals or support that they may need. We also have trauma-focused therapy,
right.
Which the therapist use evidence-based programs, modalities to help the children and their families deal with the trauma that they may have experienced.
All right.
We also had the last kind of piece of our puzzle that we were added in 2012 was on-site medical evaluations.
Right.
We're very fortunate to have physicians and a registered nurse from Children's Hospital of Michigan who come and do those exams on site. And then we also have an outreach and prevention department, which does amazing work working with the community and other professionals to help keep the children as safe as we can.
All right. Is there sometimes, it sounds like you've got different organizations interacting, and that was probably why it came to be in the first place, was that, you know, children were being bounced around, that type of thing. Is there some also, the advocacy, and this is a new concept for, as I'm hearing it, and I'm trying to help my listeners do the same thing. It's not protective service. Are they lawyers, social workers, or just what is the training of the people that work with the advocacy program?
Yeah, so most of our, apart from the medical physicians who obviously have medical backgrounds, the vast majority of our employees have some type of human services field.
All right.
So perhaps they have counseling or criminal justice, or there's many social workers there.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of this, you know, there's not necessarily a degree in school to learn this. It's a lot of the skills you're taught when you're there. It's very specific things. Of course, having a trauma background is really important because that's one thing our children have in common. They've all experienced at least one trauma.
All right. The organizations that work with these children, are you part of a team? I'm used to hearing things where in the mental health or human service type of thing, there's, you know, the psychiatrist, the social worker, the play therapist, that type of thing. Is it the same type of team where the different people involved with the child come together and that type of thing? Or is it different?
Absolutely. That's kind of the whole intent of an advocacy center, is to bring all of these different disciplines that are involved and to make sure we use everybody's knowledge and resources. Mm-hmm. We have somebody, our therapists are very clinically trained.
Right.
They don't know how to interpret x-rays.
Right.
That's why our medical team steps in. So we have a whole team, which we call a multidisciplinary team, that we hopefully surround this child and this family to give them the best services that they need. Again, sometimes there are no services that are needed, and we can make that determination as well and let the children kind of go on and live their lives. But those children who do need protecting, we can use that team. And again, with resources often being very limited, it's really amazing to be able to tap into people's knowledge and resources and to try and come together for these children.
All right. How long is the advocate? Let me backtrack. Each child gets an advocate?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And how long is the advocate teamed up with the child during this whole process? How long?
Right. So essentially for as long as they need. All of the children and the families meet face-to-face with an advocate that day, and they have the opportunity to come back as they like. We do some follow-up calls with the family to kind of see how they're doing and do they need any services. Now, perhaps a case is going to be tried criminally. They do have victim advocates at the prosecutor's office, so we may do a warm handoff to them because they're very familiar, obviously, with their processes. But that's the great thing. None of the services that we do are at any cost to the families. Everything is without cost to them, and they can come back as much as they need. For instance, with our mental health services, perhaps a child has completed services and has graduated, so to speak, and maybe in a few years something comes back up and they'd like to come back, then that's certainly very fine that they do.
And is this the foster care is that another arm, or is that another department that you interface with? Or
we work probably more with Children's Protective Services, kind of at the onset of an investigation.
All right.
But perhaps a child is in foster care and something else comes up, another allegation, or perhaps some additional information about the original allegation, and so then we would work with the foster care workers then.
All right. So if I'm hearing you correctly, then you're the advocate for the legal process.
For anything, perhaps it was a domestic violence incident and housing is needed.
All right.
Helping to link that family with housing, or perhaps the breadwinner is now gone and they need
food
referrals. So, and to linking them to letting families know, your child may have some symptoms of or trauma reactions, and it's not unnatural or not. It is normal for children to have trauma reactions.
Right.
And so really just to also explain the process, because if you have, you've got this allegation, which could have been really surprising to you, shattered your world, that your child may have been abused or neglected.
Yes.
And then suddenly you have law enforcement and DHHS and Department of Health and Human Services, and it can be very overwhelming. So just to work with the family to let them know as much as we can, this is what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we're all doing it at once, so that your child does not have to go and speak to everybody individually.
Then would you say that you are more of a... I'm going to say more of that part of what you do is educate as well as a resource. It's almost like you have a potpourri of different things that you do.
Yep, absolutely. And that's the whole intent, is to really surround the families and the children with these comprehensive services, to do kind of one-stop shopping, so to speak.
Right.
But also to make sure that we utilize all of the professionals that we have, all of their skill set, and make sure that the family can benefit from that.
All right. Now, you said that your advocacy program is for all of Wayne County, Detroit, whatever. Is that correct?
Yep, all of Wayne County.
And how are people come to you? How are they referred by the courts to protect? How do they get to you?
Yes, good question. So for our forensic interviews or our medical examinations, evaluations, those children are referred from a law enforcement entity or Children's Protective Services.
All right.
And why that is so is that if there's been an allegation that a child has been abused or neglected, we need somebody who can be able to protect those children. Right. We don't have any authority to do so. So if we were to bring the children in and do an evaluation or an interview and find something, we have no authority to help keep those children safe. So that's the reason that if there has been an allegation of abuse or neglect, either criminally somebody needs to be involved and or Children's Protective Services. Sometimes we work with both entities, sometimes it's just one. Now for our mental health services, they don't have to, the families can refer themselves mm-hmm. or they can be referred by a professional, and they don't have to have any of our other services to be able to participate in that. The only qualifier for our mental health services is that the child has experienced some type of trauma.
Okay. And I'm just trying to make sure I get feedback. So the referral comes from the prosecutor, the protective services. Is that one of the ways the majority come to you?
For the interviews and the medicals, yes.
Okay. Let's backtrack again. Then I'm still coming out of my mental health background. we're looking at So the schools might have someone who's alleged. Would they then make a referral to you, or does it have to go through another source in order to get to you?
Right. So if anybody, a mandated reporter or just a community member, has a concern about a child, then that should be reported to centralized intake. And so that is they've now centralized the referral process for anybody who wants to report a concern about abuse and neglect.
Okay.
So once that's made, then that will be funneled down to the correct location. And then those people would call us, and then those assigned Child Protective Services.
All right.
So, it's a good opportunity to say that if you do have a concern about a child being abused or neglected, you don't have to be able to prove it. It's just you're reporting a concern, a suspicion. It is then the professional's job to look into it and to see if there's anything that needs to be done in order to keep those children safe. I think sometimes people have the opinion that Children's Protective Services just kind of goes in and takes children. That's the very last resort. They want to keep families together.
Mm-hmm.
There's nowhere, really to put children. And the fact of the matter is children are most often best at homes.
Okay.
So they're going to go in and assess to see if the children are safe or not. Can they put services in to help make sure that the child's safe, or perhaps some classes or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
If the child were to be removed, they're going to look first to see if there's a family member the child can go to. And then after that, it would be foster care. But as long as you're making a report in good faith that you know that it's not true and that you know that you're not reporting something that you know is not true. But if you're making that report in good faith, there's nothing that can happen. Your information is kept confidential. It's actually, there's a law that it prohibits Children's Protective Services or anybody from releasing reporter information.
Right,
so
right.
It's very, very confidential if someone's concerned about that.
I guess I'm still trying to get clarify how, I hear what you're doing is more or less how do they get to you, and that's what I'm not quite
clear. Okay.
Okay.
Sure. So perhaps there's somebody has a report about Susie.
Susie
has made a disclosure that somebody's touching her. So let's say she tells a teacher. So the teacher would then report that to the centralized intake of Department of Health and Human Services.
Okay.
That would go to a local office wherever Susie lives, and then that person would receive a report that says Susie made a disclosure that someone's touching her. They would then call us and say, can you please interview this child, and if appropriate, do an exam.
Okay. All right.
So, and at that point, then we'd see, Does this need to be also reported to law enforcement? Did they need to be involved? And if so, then we'll make sure that law enforcement and Children's Protective Services is there at the same time.
All right. So feeding back again, you are a part of that central intake component. Is that right?
We are not. That centralized intake is just for Department of Health and Human Services. That's how they receive their reports.
Okay, but you are a resource of them.
Yes. So, So anybody from the local office in Wayne County, and there's advocacy centers in the other surrounding counties as well.
Mm-hmm.
If they need that service of a forensic interview or a medical evaluation or some advocacy mental health services, then we can provide those things.
I see. Could a teacher who's made a PS referral, could they more or less encourage a referral to you, or is that all still part of the intake process and it all comes through the intake arm of all that.
Yeah, I mean, they could ultimately, the kind of decision about whether to bring the child in for a forensic interview or not will be with the assigned multidisciplinary team. So that assigned worker from Children's Protective Services, that assigned attorney general and prosecutor's office. But definitely if a teacher was concerned and wanted to say that in the report, I really think this child could benefit from a forensic interview, then that way it would be in reporting, in writing in the report.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a break right here and then we'll come right back. Okay.
Thank you.
Violence in the home and violence against children at the hands of caregivers is one of the most serious types of violence that kids can experience.
When children don't receive services for trauma-related problems, we know that they are at greater risk for being re-victimized and for other types of problems. So it's very important that we provide to kids that we serve the best possible treatment.
Children that have been maltreated, so physical abuse, neglect, and sexual abuse kids. A pediatrician just has to realize that when they see things, that they need to take note of things. You know, this doesn't look right or that story doesn't sound right.
So Christian, how'd you get these?
They have to be proactive.
There are many bad things that happen in the lives of children that are not necessarily traumatic. When we say traumatic, we mean that there is a threat either to the life, the health, physical integrity of a child in a way that it very likely raises fear and anxiety.
These abused children usually have some emotional problems, so we need good mental health people to deal with the aftermath. The child has to be able to express themselves and be able to talk through their feelings.
There's no one set profile for how kids respond to traumatic events. It's important to keep in mind that not every child who experiences a traumatic event necessarily has long-standing problems. So the key is to do a real clear assessment.
Moving into foster care, and when did that happen?
We know there's a cumulative effect of trauma. The more traumatic events a child experiences, the harder it is to deal with subsequent events.
Is that right?
Children that have been exposed to violence oftentimes have difficulty processing emotion. They have difficulty processing things cognitively as well. This translates into difficult and sometimes dysfunctional behavior for them.
We know from studies that children that have been physically abused are more aggressive. They have more school problems. They have poor social interactions.
We now have a variety of interventions that have a significant threshold of empirical research demonstrating that they actually work with kids who have been victimized, kids from all ethnic backgrounds, kids from all sorts of families, all areas of the country. One of the hardest things that we have to deal with in the child victim world is how do we put a child in contact with a trained therapist?
When law enforcement is coming into contact with these children, when Guardians Ad Litem, when Child Protective Services, all these different organizations that deal with children who have been violence exposed, they really need to be trained to provide appropriate referrals for evidence-based treatments.
The harm that had been inflicted on this young boy was horrendous.
From the moment a child comes into the child welfare system, into our courts, we focus like a laser on that child, what that child's needs are. We try to use research and science to anticipate what some of the problems will be. For example, if this is a very young child, 1 to 3, we know from the research that they have 4 to 5 times greater chance of having a developmental delay than children in the general population. We've set up a system of care once we identify the problem to treat it and follow up to make sure that the child gets the treatment developmentally, psychologically, emotionally, and physically as well.
We really use a variety of different evidence-based interventions with the kids we see. Probably the most common one we use is trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy.
TFCBT is really a very flexible type of treatment that can be adapted to different types of trauma problems, to different types of ethnic groups. You can integrate cultural constructs into it.
Child parent psychotherapy is one of the evidence-based practices that we have incorporated into our Miami Child Wellbeing Court. It's an amazing intervention. We have moms who come to us in our court who do not know that they should smile at their baby. They do not know that when their baby cries, they should pick their baby up. They think that's spoiling the baby. If there is a way to stop the intergenerational transmission of child maltreatment, this is it.
Virtually all effective interventions for children exposed to violence involve parents, caregivers, or other folks who are in charge of taking care of this child.
What's the name of that baby?
When children don't deal with their abuse issues, they have problems later on in life. A lot of physical things, emotional things. There's a very important study that's called the ACE study about the adverse childhood experiences with abuse and violence. And it has shown that those people that have been exposed to that have high blood pressure, diabetes, heart problems, depression. So we know that we need to take care of those children that have been abused, and maybe that can help with preventing those adulthood diseases that affect them later on in life.
Coming up with new creative ways of spreading evidence-based services so that every victimized child in every corner of the country has access to the effective interventions that they need is our biggest challenge in the field right now.
All right, welcome back. And this is Betty Daniels. We're with Melanie.
Yes, Melanie Richards.
Richards,
yes.
Okay. From the Kid Talk, but it's called the Kids Talk
Children's Advocacy Center.
Kid Talk's Advocacy Center. And where is the center located? You said with TGC, and where exactly is that located, Kenneth?
Yeah, so we have two locations for Kids Talk Children's Advocacy Center. They're exactly the same. It's just we have two because Wayne County is so large.
Yes, it is.
So either location can be used, whatever's most convenient for the families or for the professionals that are involved. Mm-hmm. So we have one on the campus of the Guidance Center. So that's in Southgate off of Northline Road. And then we also have a location in Detroit. It's off of Woodward on Ferry Street, which is about a block north of the DIA.
All right. Is that part of the Children's Center?
It is not. We are down the street, so we definitely share children and share referrals and things like that, but we are not related to them.
All right. How many people are we talking about that are involved with this organization? How large is the organization and how many people?
So for the Guidance Center, it's quite a large organization. It's about a $40-41 million program. Like I said, we are a program of them. So we have currently, including our interns who we rely on, which are great, we have about 44 employees who work with us directly at Kids Talk. And of course, that doesn't include all the professionals that we work with collaboratively. So last year, we interviewed approximately 1,600 children.
That was the number I was going to ask you. Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
So about 1,600 children. We provided medical evaluations for approximately 150, and then we provided about 330 trauma-focused mental health services. With our outreach and prevention department, that's the area that we've been very fortunate to grow this past year. We provided education activities to both adults and children. It was 2,500, I believe, and then also prevention services to children. You know, it's very interesting. We teach children what to do if there's a fire, what to do if there's a tornado.
Okay.
But the statistics are for sexual abuse that 1 in 10 children will be sexually abused by the time they're 18. 1 in 10. So if you think about our average elementary school classrooms,
right,
that's a lot of children.
That's right.
But we don't teach them what to do. We don't teach them what to do if someone does that. 90% of children are sexually abused by somebody that they know.
Right.
And we don't teach them what to do if they reach out for help and that person can't or won't help them. Mm-hmm. So we've been very excited to go into the schools and to provide a body safety training for the children.
Okay.
And it works with, providing children and making sure it's in a non-threatening way, but just more to educate them about what to do, that it's okay to say no to an adult when it comes to things like this. And then we also teach the teachers and the school staff, you know, everybody from the individuals who serve lunch to driving the buses, that they are mandated reporters and what to do right. if a child says something. And also, of course, the family members that they want to, you know, to help them. What can they do to help keep their children as safe as possible? Our outreach and prevention department has also been working with the faith-based community, right. which has been great. We've been partnering with several organizations to try and provide some education to the faith-based community to what can they do to keep their communities as safe as possible.
All right. How many children have you said you've served? Again,
there was about 1,600 last year. Sorry.
Okay, 1,600 last year, and that's about the ballpark and average of what to how many you serve per year.
Yes, it has fluctuated a little bit. You know, we feel that sometimes if our numbers go up, it's not necessarily that children are being abused at a more rapid rate, but perhaps those are children that we haven't reached before.
Right.
You know, we know some communities are less likely to involve the outside. Mm-hmm. If there's, you know, matters such as these. And so we're really trying to do some education in those communities that we don't receive as many referrals from that we know we should.
Right.
Because this child abuse and neglect, it really does not know any race, any religion, any socioeconomic status. And so to really, you know, and oftentimes something perhaps in a more affluent area is maybe not reported as frequently as it is in a low economic area.
All right. How now the outreach and that type is informing the community or getting to the children. I'm thinking about the parents. The advocacy is for the child, which is great. In my experience, contact, I've got a human service background. Sometimes there is that gap between the parent and the child, okay, where both of them are going through, they're being impacted by the same, protocol, process, or whatever, but it has a different, it's almost like a grief kind of a thing. Everybody does it, it responds differently. Is there any kind of thing that kind of more helps them to, you know, process it so the family as a whole gets an advocate or champion?
Right. Absolutely. So, yes, I mean, this also impacts the siblings. You know, mm-hmm. perhaps they've witnessed it. Perhaps they haven't, but know something is going on. So, yes, it can impact all of the family. So we're very fortunate that we're able to work with the whole family. So the advocate can work with the child. It can work. The advocate can work with the parent or the adult or other, you know, important people in the children's lives. And we do a lot of education about kind of what to expect and when things, you need to reach out for help a little bit more.
Right.
And, you know, but that a lot of these trauma reactions are very normal to go through. So, yes, we can definitely see siblings of parents. And like I said, we're very ingrained in the community that we can also refer. We can't obviously see everybody or right. treat everybody, so then we can use our resources to other area mental health agencies to make sure we link these families with what's going to be best for them.
How long, and I think we kind of touched base on this earlier in the interview, the families, on the average, how long is the family involved with the advocacy or the child is involved with the advocacy center?
Right. So that's kind of dependent. You know, some families, you know, meet with us in person on the day of their appointments, and then perhaps we speak with them a few more times, and then they feel that they're okay to continue on their own. Other ones, you know, perhaps touch base with us a bit more. We've had some of our advocates go to court with the families just mm-hmm. as a support.
Mm-hmm.
Again, so there's really no time frame. It's really depending on the family.
Mm-hmm.
Our families who participate in mental health services, they can also range a lot depending on the child's needs.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of the children we have had just experienced the trauma, so perhaps they're not yet demonstrating
yes,
trauma
yes.
symptoms.
Right.
And so what we'd like to do, we're very fortunate to have grant funding that we can see those children kind of before they start to show those trauma reactions and hopefully prevent them.
Right.
So those children would be seen for perhaps a very short period of time just to make sure to help them process through the trauma and make sure that they're okay.
But is not the responsibility of the advocacy to become like the counselors or therapists? That's another referral to someone, another organization, but another unit.
Correct. So everybody kind of has their role. So there's the forensic interviewing, there's advocacy, there's mental health services, there is the medical services and outreach and prevention. So okay. all of these things collectively make up the Children's Advocacy Center. Mm-hmm. Everybody kind of does their own piece in addition to our partners from the okay. outside agencies. And that's what makes an advocacy center. There is, as I said, a national, there's 10 standards to meet for accreditation. And mm-hmm. so our agency, our program was accredited in 2013,
right.
which we're very excited about that. And, you know, Wayne County being the largest county in Michigan, we see the most amount of children. And we're really one of the last big counties in the state to have an advocacy center.
Okay. All right. You're the assistant director, and there's so are you and you're part of the guidance center, so that you're the guidance center, which is a community mental health.
Yes.
Okay. And so that's one of the services that the guidance center provides. Am I interpreting that correctly?
Yes. The guidance center actually has about 40 programs. we're one of those, and they serve children all the way from birth to adulthood. So there's many different, there's a developmental disabilities program, there's parent infant mental health, there is counseling for adults, substance abuse counseling, otherwise we have a juvenile justice program, and many, many programs in between. Head Start is a huge part of the guidance center, and Great Start Readiness and all those type of programs. So we're, it is a very expansive program, agency.
All right. With the advocacy, what are some of the milestones that that you've seen come about within that type of, you know, the type of program that you provide, the services that you provide?
Absolutely. I mean, we just want the children to kind of go back to having their childhood, mm-hmm. you know, and the children who walk in our door are no different than the children you see in the grocery store or playing in the playground. They are those same children. Mm-hmm. 1 in 10, the number is staggering. We want those children to be able to be in an environment where they're safe. That's our first and foremost priority.
Mm-hmm.
And to help them heal from the trauma they've experienced, those okay. who have, you know, I think our clinicians do some amazing work. We mm-hmm. had a little one who had been sexually abused by a family member and ended up, went to criminal court mm-hmm. and the family member went to jail, was convicted. And she was very conflicted about that.
Yes, right. They take ownership that it's their fault, that they've done something.
Yeah, or that it was what they, because they disclosed, put this person in jail. And so our therapist worked with that child, and there was other two smaller children in the home. And so they were talking about, you know, what about your little brother and sister? And what do you think your role played in them? And
mm-hmm.
so she kind of, through therapy, realized that she had really worked to keep her siblings safe, that they wouldn't have to go through
yes.
what she went through.
Yes, right.
And so the therapist said, well, what do you think that makes you? She said, that makes me a hero.
Okay. All right. The program itself, what are some of the milestones of the program itself? You know, they started off, how did you start off? You know, you start off small, or did, you know, how did you evolve and how did you grow?
Absolutely. So initially when the program began, I think that was before I was here, but I think they conducted about 40 interviews.
Mm-hmm.
So to go from 40 to 1,600 is quite a big. And as I said, it started off as a forensic interview program at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
The children, we interviewed children that were under 12
mm-hmm.
and that for allegations of sexual abuse only.
Mm-hmm.
Now we interview children for sexual abuse, allegations of physical abuse, neglect, witness to violent crimes such as homicide, arson,
right.
okay. and also those siblings.
All right.
So that program, and also children through the age of 18.
All right.
So that's definitely grown, like I said, and then at that point, the advocacy services were added,
mm-hmm.
and after that, the mental health services were added, and so now we were able to see children both in the office or home base, depending on the children's needs.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was the next piece was outreach and prevention, which has grown significantly. And then the medical evaluation services were kind of added last.
All right.
So these are, we are now, and then after that is when we applied for national accreditation and were awarded that.
Okay. All right. Do you see some other growth things being, incorporated as you continue to provide this service? Do you see other things that you may develop or come out of this program?
Absolutely. We're always, of course, trying to to grow and to make sure we can provide the best services we can. Because we've grown so much, we need to constantly evaluate how we're providing services and what we are to make sure we're meeting the needs of our community.
Mm-hmm.
This advocacy center model they look, although the 10 standards are the same, they look very different in right. each of the cities or the communities because they need to meet that county's community setting.
Oh, okay.
So that's very important to us. Obviously, child pornography and human trafficking are kind of areas that are really growing, and we're evaluating to make sure we're addressing those needs as well as we can. And like I said, we've been really trying to grow our outreach and prevention department to make sure that we are providing those services. We have a lot of individuals have a lot of expertise. Our medical professionals are amazing, our clinicians, and so make sure that we're using those adequately to help train the professionals and also get trained from them to make sure that we are doing everything we can for the children.
Okay. A question came to my mind as you were explaining this, that with your outreach and prevention, you're getting out into, you know, faith-based organizations and things. Is this more or less to educate people about what the abuses are as opposed to getting referrals into your program?
Correct. I mean, the main purpose is to make sure that people are aware of child abuse, maltreatment, and trauma and what that may look like. Okay. For example, sometimes in the schools, children who are having trauma reactions or triggered by something, perhaps something that happened in the classroom, if you're not familiar with trauma reaction or triggers, you're going to think that child's just misbehaving. Is a badly behaved child. Education is very important. In the faith-based community has been really receptive. They want to make their communities as safe as possible. So it's education about abuse and neglect, signs and symptoms, and then it's also what can be done to try and make those environments as safe as possible. And then if something does happen and or a child does disclose, what to do, who can you go to for help?
Is there also this education about trauma itself?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're part of an initiative with the Detroit Wayne Mental Health Authority to make Wayne County a trauma-informed system of care. So that's when these children and families reach out to any of these entities in Wayne County, that the professionals involved will be trauma-informed and hopefully make that process more smoothly.
Okay. We've had almost about 30 minutes or so about that. Is there anything during this particular discussion that we have not touched on that you would like mm-hmm. to make our audience aware of?
I think just, you know, it's it's the community's responsibility and us as adults to help protect children and keep them safe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think kind of keep your eyes and ears open and don't assume that somebody else is going to make that call to report a concern regarding a child. We can only help the children that we know about. There's been a lot of, you know, really high profile media cases. And I think that we think of those children and where is everybody to help them? Mm-hmm. And so we just want people to keep their eyes and ears open and report any concern of abuse or neglect so that we can make sure we can all work together to keep children safe.
Okay. If someone wanted to get in touch with your organization to get more information, how would they go about doing that?
Absolutely. So we have a website, mm-hmm. which is, if you probably the easiest way on air to say it is if you go to the Guidance Center, and then under that, the Kids Talk program will be under that. We also, of course, have just our main numbers that are listed with the Guidance Center.
Okay, and what is those numbers?
Absolutely. So if you dial either of them, they're going to get to us. One is 734-785-7716.
Mm-hmm.
And another one is 313-833-2970.
And who would they, and what would they ask for?
Yep, absolutely. If you can, there'll be hopefully a friendly person who will answer the phone and just kind of tell them if you would like some information or if you have a concern or you're not really sure, you know, where to go to, or if you need some services, and they'll get you to the right person at our agency.
They do not need to walk in, or it's more just call the person?
Probably call. There's a lot of things we want to make sure. We don't want to have them to have to come back. So we, like I said, we're trying to do everything on the front end to get everybody involved who needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
So the best thing would just to be to call and ask the question, and then we can make sure that they're directed to the right place and everything.
Okay. All right. One last thing before we go. You know that this is how many different CAC program organizations that you said that. I think you gave me that number earlier.
Yes. Nationally, about 777. And in Michigan, there's 31.
Okay. And I also heard you say that.
31 accredited. There's also some other advocacy centers in Michigan that are in the process of developing and making sure that there's coverage of areas so that every child has the ability to be served by an advocacy center.
Are all of these organizations affiliated with a community mental health program? organization, or is it?
Not all of them, no. Some of them do offer those services, but that's also the neat thing, that they're really community-based. So ours, like I said, is under the Guidance Center. There's some that are hospital-based. There's some that are just independent. There's some that are under universities. So they all look a little bit different in their locations.
Okay. And Wayne County has one. Does what other counties have these guidance centers?
Yeah, so there's, like I said, 31 accredited, so I don't think I could name all
of them. No, I'm not asking you to be the statistician. But
Oakland, Macomb, you know, Grand Rapids, one of the neat things that's happening is that there was a lot of kind of uncovered area up north in the Upper Peninsula. And so there's an organization called MINCA, which is the Michigan chapter of the National Children's Alliance. And the National Children's Alliance is the accrediting body. And so the Michigan chapter has really been working very hard to make sure that Michigan has coverage. So they've been doing some regional advocacy centers to try and make sure those children have coverage, including kind of telemedicine type things. And there's also a mobile unit that's begun, which then that can, in those kind of uncovered areas, rural areas, they can travel closer to those families and children so they can benefit from the services.
Okay. What are some of the, you were talking about the community and the different distinctions, and I hear about the different programs. What can you kind of give me a distinction of what one advocacy center looks like as distinct from another one?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, like I said, they're all going to be generally the same. Perhaps sometimes in a rural community, there would be, we're a big, large community, so we have two locations, mm-hmm. and then we have all of our services at both locations. Because, you know, in a rural community, maybe that community, that one advocacy center serves three counties.
Okay.
And perhaps they would do the forensic interviews on site, but maybe they would partner or contract with somebody to do the mental health services or the medical services. So in order to be an accredited CAC, you have to be able to provide all those services either directly in-house or through partnerships with other agencies in your community.
Okay. Is there a volunteer component with your program?
Absolutely. There's obviously confidentiality is a very big deal to us. We want to make sure the children are...
But of course.
Yes, always. But especially with ours, it's can be a very sensitive topic.
Okay. All right.
So there is a process of volunteers, but absolutely with volunteers and interns, we there is no one single source of funding for advocacy centers, and so we definitely rely on the help of our community to help us going, keep us going. We have some community members who provide snacks for us. We have children are often very hungry when they come, and none of our grants really allow us to buy food. But obviously, if you've been hungry, you can't really concentrate on this important work that needs to be done. So yes, we very much welcome volunteers. So somebody would just call, there's a volunteer coordinator at the Guidance Center.
Okay.
And then that person could help them through the process, and we accept and welcome volunteers at both locations.
Okay, and we're going to actually give that number again?
Sure, absolutely. And so for the volunteer would be, I'll just give the two Kids Talk numbers, and we can route you. 734-785-7716 or 313-833-2970.
All right. And your website?
Yes. It's if you go to theguidancecenter.org, mm-hmm. And then the Kids Talk page will be on there. It's /Kids Talk. So it's just easier to go to the to the Guidance Center page and then look for the Kids Talk CAC program.
Okay. All right. Three things. You've been with the Kids Talk for how long?
I've been here for approximately 5 years. I've worked in child abuse for about 16 or 17 and with advocacy centers, so I'm very much invested in this model and what we're trying to do.
Okay. And if you had to identify the three things that the Kids Talk or the CAC, did I say that correctly?
Yes.
The three things or that CAC does is what?
So we work with community to address allegations, or I don't know, address is not really the right word, but work with allegations of child maltreatment in Wayne County.
Mm-hmm.
And I think providing those comprehensive services that we've been speaking about, and hopefully just being a resource for Wayne County regarding trauma and child abuse and neglect.
Well, thank you very much. And you've been a great interviewer. Mm-hmm. And this is Betty Daniels from MPACT saying good afternoon. And I look to see you next Tuesday, the fourth Tuesday of next month.
It's not something you speak about with friends. And while many people don't know about it or think about it, A dark secret exists. There are things happening to the children in our community that should not be happening. Our children are being abused.
I wouldn't have expected him to do that. And he knew that my sister was mentally limited. And just for someone to manipulate a child, I still can't get my head around it.
The long-term effects of child abuse can be devastating and include poor physical health, low self-esteem, psychiatric problems, substance abuse, cognitive dysfunction, and aggression. To many, the statistics are unknown, but that doesn't make the numbers any less staggering. Child abuse is one of the most common causes of death of children in the U.S. Kids under the age of 4 are killed by child abuse more than any other cause. 5 children in this country are killed by child abuse or child neglect every day. Nationally, 1 in every 4 girls and 1 in every 6 boys is sexually abused before the age of 18. Staggering facts and figures, but even more staggering is how close they hit to home, our home.
When he told me that his older brother had molested him when he was living at home with his mother, see, that was a shock to me, you know, because he was, you know, he had been programmed, you can never tell nobody.
Thousands of children are forced to live with the emotional scars. Many more live in fear, waiting for the next time that someone is going to force them to do something unspeakable with their bodies.
Our foster child doesn't have any memories of her mom or dad. She was raised by her great-grandma for the first 6 years after a relative adopted her. And during that placement, she experienced the most abuse in her whole life. And then she went to, I believe we were home 7 from that, and she's 10.
We've made it a very important goal to have a CAC. We wanted to have it in Detroit because Detroit is the largest city within Michigan. And Detroit has the largest number of allegations of physical and sexual abuse. Wayne County, being the largest county, has the largest number of allegations of physical and sexual abuse in Michigan.
In Wayne County, more than 100,000 of our children will likely be victims of sexual abuse before they reach adulthood. Fortunately, in our community, there's a bright light at the end of this very dark tunnel. The Kids Talk Children's Advocacy Center is a place where the unspeakable is spoken. It's a place where children's voices are heard and where their suffering is turned into hope.
We've got an amazing team of people that make this advocacy center work. We have prosecutors, we have police departments, and these officers and detectives who just work tirelessly. And one of our biggest partners is Department of Human Services.
What we do is we bring all of these parties to the table, and we have our trained forensic interviewer interview with the child one-on-one while the other multidisciplinary team members are observing in a separate room. This allows the child a comfortable space to make a disclosure. And meanwhile, those who need to see and hear what's going on are able to do so while sitting separately.
Children are interviewed in a manner that is legal, neutral, fact-finding, and developmentally sensitive.
We provide weekly individual counseling to our children, and we also provide parent sessions. The parents really appreciate that because a lot of times they don't really quite understand what their child is going through. When a child has experienced a trauma and they begin to act out in school, or their grades start to fail, they just think that maybe their child is acting out and looking for attention or something to that degree. But helping them understand how trauma really affects them emotionally and mentally helps them understand and be more sensitive to their child's needs at that time.
Kids Talk has an on-site facility with a trained medical staff to provide on-site sexual abuse evaluations.
The Children's Advocacy Center, we don't charge any of the families or children we serve anything. All the services are free. The therapeutic services, for as long as the children or their families need, are free.
The Kids Talk Children's Advocacy Center provides abuse victims and their families with the tools they need to move forward to a brighter and healthier future.
We just thought, we can't do this. You really have almost a concept.